This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF, and WPTF.com. Email us at agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org. Aging Matters, joined by Carson Sellers from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Mike Slayman.
March is Brain Injury Awareness Month. Today, we want to bring some awareness to this subject that affects so many. Hi, this is Mike Slayman, and this is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surround you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on WPTF, FM 92.9, AM 680, and WPTF.com. I'm joined by Carson Sellers from Transitions Life Care, and our guest, Carson, is Daniel Peterzak. Daniel serves as the Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of North Carolina. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're looking forward to the conversation. So why don't we just dive right in here? Why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this field?
I have been working in various nonprofits for my entire career, and it just so happened that, brain injury was particularly of interest to me. I've had several families. My father received a brain injury in the 90s and subsequently had some additional strokes later on in life and then had Parkinson's disease as well. So very well aware of what that is, but, certainly of interest. So, of course, when the opportunity arose, definitely was something of interest and wanted to jump in.
Do you mind sharing, you are the Executive Director of Brain Injury Association of North Carolina. Do you mind sharing a little bit about y'all's mission and the work that you do?
Really, every year we are in touch with, we work with, 70,000 to 80,000 across North Carolina. We serve all 100 counties. And the way we look at it is we're kind of the hub of a bunch of different aspects of brain injury services around the state. And by that, we mean that we connect with providers. We try to do lots of training and educational opportunities. We also try to educate the community about brain injury. We do some certification courses to help with professionals that they can learn how to work with those with a brain injury and become more familiar with it. We also participate in just some different programming for those who have a brain injury. Often, most of it is very affordable, if not free. We have a program called Thriving Survivor. It's 4 one-hour classes, usually about in the middle of the day, and it's things like adaptive fitness. We have music therapy. We also have some other things going on as well. And then, of course, once a year, we have a great program. We have what's called our Camp Thrive. So we usually have about 100 to 150 brain injury survivors who come out with caregivers and professionals, and we just kind of do what you would usually do at a camp. So we're very excited about that. And then the other component that we also do is advocacy. So as a matter of fact, just the beginning of this month, we were up in Washington, D.C., meeting with various folks to go ahead and pitch for some stuff that the brain injury community needs all across the country. And we also do that in North Carolina as well.
That's great. Those are some really, really important resources. So as we've already said, March is National Brain Injury Awareness Month. How do you typically observe this month? And why is it so important to raise awareness at this time?
So one of the biggest issues with brain injury awareness in general is that many individuals who have a brain injury, it goes unseen. And a lot of times it's actually referred to as the invisible injury itself. And so what we hear very often is that, symptoms are misdiagnosed or people make assumptions about the way a certain person may behave. And so we really try to tell people when you think someone might be lazy or they might be forgetful or something. We challenge people to think about that there might be something more going on than what meets the eye. And so, as part of this, we have been having exhibits all around the state. We have, been trying to have various programmings for folks to participate in. We also do what's called the unmasking brain injury, when we've done workshops of those, and that is where individuals with a brain injury have an opportunity to make a mask that reflects how they feel on the inside, right? Because we say it's the invisible injury. So, people feel one way on the inside, but again, they might appear as though, things are normal, right, on the outside. And so that's really what we're trying to help people do is help folks recognize what those folks are going through. We also, even today, we've got the unmasking. We've got a workshop going on today as well. We had one in Asheville, and you know, really just trying to kind of get out and trying to get in front of folks.
That's awesome. So when it comes to this unmasking brain injury that you guys do, how have you personally seen survivors and their families respond to this form of self-expression and advocacy?
So this was actually, it's really interesting. This unmasking brain injury actually started, there's a facility in Davidson, North Carolina. It's called Hines Pete Farm, and the founding family kind of got things started. And so we're one of just many, many states, and actually I think there's about four countries involved that do this. And it's one of the most popular programs that we have. And so, you know, what happens is we will often, if we're hosting a workshop, we will often bring the masks, and we will bring, it might be newspaper clippings, it'll be, you know, paint, it'll be, you know, other kind of arts and crafts supplies. And folks will come in and we typically ask them to kind of think about their feelings, how, you know, their brain injury happened, what, you know, and how they want to visually represent this. We find that this is one of the best ways for these individuals. It's, you know, it's basically art therapy, right? It's really putting down your feelings and emotions and what you're struggling with. And so, you know, we just see it's really wonderful to watch survivors with their families or caregivers sit down and do this activity and really just kind of express themselves. And then usually, you know, what we do is we actually upload them to a national database, and so there are literally thousands that are on there. So, you know, it's really, again, cool for them to be able to go back and see that there's, you know, that they're, the way they're feeling is represented, you know, for anyone to see.
Why do you think that this idea of being advocating for yourself, this idea of just feeling seen and heard and making people aware of what you're going through, why do you think that's so important when it comes to brain injuries and brain injury survivors?
It is extremely hard for, I think, for folks to understand what an individual goes through. And a lot of times when we're doing a lot of trainings, we will kind of sit back and do kind of an imagination exercise. You know, try to put yourself in the place of an individual. And again, a lot of times, you know, we're usually referring to, you know, older individuals, you know, might be a teen, a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, where, you know, all of a sudden one day your life completely changes if you have a traumatic brain injury, or even in some aspects, what we would call a non-traumatic brain injury or acquired brain injury, where, you know, something internally changes. And so, you know, it might be that you remember the way things were before your brain injury, but post-brain injury, things are different. Your cognitive skills are different. Your memory may be different. Your personality may be different. The way you enjoy life changes, or maybe you don't enjoy life. All those things are there, but you still remember this person before that, right? You still remember the experiences in many cases. And again, this is separate from those who, of course, have memory issues and whatnot. But, you know, for these folks, there's sometimes frustration. There's sometimes anger. Sometimes parts of their brains have been damaged, or in some cases removed, whereas, you know, there are those changes, right? There's the cognitive changes, there's emotional changes, and so, you know, or even just the ability to get stuff done, right? And so, you know, if you're a big marketing guru, or if you're, you know, if you're an investor and you experience this accident, or experience any kind of a trauma or tumor or everything, you would have to say you don't have the same skills potentially that you had. And so, you know, imagine, you know, your job being taken away, and you know, financial difficulties and hardships begin to be put in your way. So it's extremely important for folks to understand that this is a change of life. It really is in many cases. And many folks, you know, we have a good number of folks who are able to recover, but for those who don't, for those who live with it, they have to, you know, wake up every day and into this new, we could call it a new normal, right? And that's why we always encourage folks to really thrive. And we use the word thrive because we want them to do the best they can within their ability, right? Because that's going to be different for everybody.
If you need any information about Daniel's organization, go to BIANC.net. When we continue on Aging Matters, we'll talk about why brain injuries are more common in older adults. You're listening to Aging Matters on WPTF, FM 92.9, AM 680, and WPTF.com.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one. Aging Matters, joined by Carson Sellers from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Mike Slayman.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, and Daniel Peterzak from the Brain Injury Association of North Carolina is our special guest today, Carson.
Yes, absolutely. We had a great overview in the first segment. Now we're going to dive a little bit more into the nitty-gritty of this. So let's talk a little bit about the statistics revolving around brain injuries, especially when it comes to older adults. Can you tell us what you know about that, Daniel?
Happy to. So falls are alarmingly common among older adults. Each year, over 14 million adults, about 65 or older, report some type of fall. And so that's basically, that equates to about one in four seniors. These incidents lead to about 3 million emergency departments visits every year. It's really important to kind of keep that in mind. So, you know, even in 2021, falls among those who were over the age of 65, there was about 38,000 deaths as a result of that. It was one of the leading cause of injury death of that age group. We also see additionally adults age 75 and older have the highest rates of traumatic brain injury-related hospitalizations and deaths, with falls accounting for 51% of TBIs in older adults.
Wow, I did not know that, so that is good to know. What role does early intervention play in the recovery process for individuals with brain injuries, again, especially for older adults?
So early intervention. So if we're looking at it from, you know, understanding, I guess, the risks that are there. When you're looking through contributing factors, we know that balance and mobility, right, can be an issue. So, you know, muscle weakness, poor conditioning, and even dizziness, if you already kind of have kind of an impaired stability, can be there. Medication, right? We know as we age, we all end up being on more medication. Certain medications can have a drowsiness effect, or even if you're on something that may cause lower blood pressure, right, you're increasing that risk. Home hazards, those who still live independently, there might be things like rugs, inadequate lighting, or maybe even just clutters that can lead to some kind of a trip or fall. Vision and hearing changes, sometimes we, as obviously as we get older, our eyesight does not work as well. And so, you know, we're not able to detect or avoid hazards. And then, of course, you know, cognitive impairment, right? You know, you're just kind of getting up just like, you know, as if you're groggy. You may not think right, or you may not grasp onto something correctly, and you have that. We also have chronic conditions that can be, you know, that can create various impairments as well that can really contribute to all of that. We know that there's also indications for those who have who are even higher risk beyond that. So, you know, we know that if someone has had a previous fall, they might have a fall again, right? Because their vestibular system may be impacted, and they may be wobbly still or whatever else, so they have an even higher chance of that. And that also ties into those who have balance issues, right, already. Medication changes, right? We've all taken medication. You know, what does all the medication labels have on them? The little side effects. So one of them might be something that might contribute to a fall. Any kind of health condition which, you know, might be chronic, which impacts mobility, you know, arthritis, maybe certain neurological disorders as those continue to advance, all can kind of be part of that.
Absolutely. How do you think families can recognize early signs of brain injury in older adults, and why is it so crucial to act quickly when it comes to something like this?
Great question. So, you know, one of the things is you know, as we all age, right, we all know that there's going to be additional things that continue to happen to us as we age and have that, you know, that process. So, you know, being proactive is definitely a great way. It doesn't 100% guarantee, right, but it does reduce some of the risk. So prevention is definitely there. So, you know, staying physically active for those who can, and we're not talking about going out on a 20-mile jog every day, right? We're talking about something, maybe doing seated Tai Chi or yoga,
right,
or some kind of adaptive fitness. And actually, if you go to our website, bionk.net, and you visit our YouTube channel, we actually have, there's many different exercises that folks can watch and do. But again, you know, adaptive fitness is so important. Reviewing medication, so understanding what side effects might be when you're taking medications, and understanding that, you know, maybe you do need to cut back some activities or be more careful on certain medications until your body has become used to it. Another really one, a great one that families can step in on is modifying the home, right? The home environment. So obviously removing trip hazards, like, you know, yank up all those loose rugs, make sure that pathways are clear. You know, installing bars in the bathroom and handrails on stairs, so significantly important. You know, getting in and out of the bath, making sure that there's proper stuff that folks can grab onto, and that it's properly secured. That's another one.
Right.
Lighting is extremely important, right? Any kind of, you know, any area you're going to be, you know, especially staircases and hallways, right? And then the other one is, if you're going outside, walk for uneven walkways. You know, as little as a quarter of an inch can really throw someone off. A quarter of an inch, and that's everybody. So imagine if you have these other impairments on top of that. We want to make sure the folks definitely make sure that they get their vision and hearing checked.
Mm-hmm.
Again, and that helps them to better navigate. You know, we always encourage folks to use assistive devices like walkers. And then appropriate footwear. My dad was notorious for wearing the worst footwear in the world. And, you know, so, you know, if you're doing it, make sure you've got good soled shoes, or, you know, if you prefer socks, make sure they're the kind with that rubbery grip on the bottom.
Those are great tips. These are all very small things that could prevent something from happening that could cause a much bigger issue. I think that's very important. Going back to kind of the physical activity part that we spoke about, and maintaining this active lifestyle, for older adults who may be hesitant to exercise due to fear of falling, can you speak a little bit more to the balance between physical activity and caution, ensuring seniors remain active but also don't push themselves into these risky situations?
Absolutely. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we do really encourage folks to seek out the adaptive fitness. You know, there's lots of programming out there. I know YMCA's is one of them that has it. They gear a lot of programming towards seniors or older adults. So, you know, getting involved in one of those, especially when there is some kind of a trained person who's there who can assist, I think is really great. And then, you know, stretching, right? Stretching is something that definitely is not going to take too much time, nor is it going to be where it's too physically engaging for an individual. And again, you know, just making sure that, you know, the body remains limber. But, we, you know, we definitely encourage folks to seek stuff out. And again, you know, those who are I know we're talking in an older population, but if they're handy with the internet, there are lots of resources. And again, if they have a family member that can even help them, you know, setting something up on a TV is really great. But they can definitely find a lot of engaging programming on the internet.
Just one more question before we go to break. What would you say are some of the most common misconceptions people have about brain injuries?
Like we mentioned earlier, a lot of people tend to mislabel and misattribute symptoms of brain injury. And so, you know, again, we might be calling someone forgetful, we might be calling someone lazy or using some other term, and they really don't see the inner workings of what's going on inside that person's brain, that there could be cognitive impairment, there could be memory impairment. And so, you know, misconceptions, as we like to say, one brain injury is one brain injury, and they are all different. People regain different skills, and you know, with one and not with another. But, you know, really just going ahead and thinking about, you know, what that individual might be going through is just really essential.
Boy, it makes me think about those avid pickleballers, that they may want to arm themselves with extra padding and helmets to protect themselves. Aging Matters will continue right here in WPTF, FM 92.9, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Stay tuned.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF, and WPTF.com. Email us at agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org. Aging Matters, joined by Carson Sellers from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Mike Slayman.
We're talking about brain injuries this week on Aging Matters, and I'm on your website right now, Daniel, at BINC.net. Tell me about some of the tools that you have on your site for folks who are currently suffering from brain injuries to help with their recovery.
One of the things we believe is, you know, we want to engage those with a brain injury. We want to keep them active. And this is, you know, geared towards those who, you know, are not back at, you know, the work or something else, you know, because we always know that a large majority of our community always wants to kind of get back to the quote-unquote normal. You know, some folks who are maybe too early to kind of get back to a regular routine, or folks who have a little bit more of a, you know, affected more long-term by a brain injury, you know, they still need engaging opportunities, just like any of us. We need purpose. We need something to look forward to. And so when we created Thriving Survivor, we really wanted to create an engaging opportunity that was not overwhelming. You know, we know in our population that those who participate in activities can not just experience physical, you know, tiredness, right? They have also, you know, where they might be cognitively tired. And so we usually find, you know, about an hour of these types of activities is what we look at. But we offer the four activities. So, you know, brain aerobics really is usually looking, having a conversation about needs and goals of an individual, and really looking at activities that increase language and cognitive skills based on those goals. So, you know, again, it might be playing games. It might be, you know, trying to have various conversations, but it's things that really just kind of keep your brain working and active.
And is all that part of the Thriving Survivor program that we touched a little bit on earlier?
It is. It is. So there's actually three other classes. So as you mentioned earlier, there is the virtual games group. And, you know, who doesn't love games, right? So, you know, thank goodness for, you know, Zoom and all that kind of stuff. But we're able to bring folks different things. So it might be, you know, playing Jeopardy online or Family Feud or doing some kind of trivia. You know, it's not competitive. It's just kind of for recreational fun. But it's getting folks together where they are able to go ahead and interact with others, which, you know, again, and socialization is a great way, right? Seeing others, and then getting to interact with them, you know, that's you know, we think is fun. Music, right? Lots of research around music therapy. So, you know, we really try to stimulate folks from the neurological perspective and get them to, you know, use music to induce basically what we call brain plasticity and aid in the neurological recovery process. So, you know, it's, again, a fun way where folks probably don't even realize it, but, you know, they're definitely working on a lot of different cognitive skills. It also, you know, impacts speech, language, all together. And then the last one we have is adaptive fitness, which we talked about a little bit earlier. And it's really helping folks, you know, move in a way, but in a very safe way, right? You know, a lot of times it's going to be seated stuff. There's not a lot of crazy stuff going on. We're not asking folks to, you know, run a mile in place or something like that, but they're able to move so that it's beneficial to the body, but it's also still very safe for them.
That's great. Those all sound very beneficial, something that might be overlooked for somebody struggling with a brain injury. For many older adults, brain injuries can be more complicated due to pre-existing conditions. How do brain injuries affect older individuals differently from younger ones who may not have these pre-existing complications?
That is a great question. You know, as we age, our bodies naturally undergo, you know, changes, right? And of course, you know, we see that we have these risks of falls and everything. you know, we have obviously muscle loss, you know, joints become stiffer, slower reaction times. And as we mentioned, again, we did talk about, you know, vision and hearing impairments can impede all of that as well. So, you know, longer term, as we look at this, we typically see our brain injury community aging a little bit faster than the general population. And, you know, certainly when, you know, you are an older adult and you are just trying to, you know, you're trying to enjoy life as it is, you know, you throw in the complexity of a brain injury on top of that, you're not going to be as physically active, right? You're not going to be, you know, your cognitive, and we all know cognitive, you know, capacity declines over time. It may impact that as well. And same thing with memory. So, you know, when you have all these different factors contributing to that, it does tend to age and compounds the aging process for this population.
Speaking more to that, getting a little bit deeper there, so these coexisting conditions and how that affects the aging process, especially in the population impacted by brain injury. Speak a little bit about that. Like, what do you think are the main points to understand there?
So, you know, as you point out, co-occurring conditions. You know, we often find those people who have health aspects either before and or, you know, develop them after, they can combine. You know, it might be the medications they're on. So, you know, if there's a certain medication that, if someone has a brain injury, let's say, and they're later on put on a medication that makes them tired or sleepy, you know, maybe, you know, kind of lethargic, not only are they increasing their risk of a fall or something else, but they're not going to be as active, right? They're not going to want to get out every day. And so that's why, you know, again, taking those proactive steps to really try and hopefully, you know, be able to lean on caregivers and family members to get you out there to stay active, because, you know, obviously then we're going to see an increase for, you know, increased risk of heart disease, diabetes, you know, many, many other things because, you're not as active as you once were. And this is, you know, this is kind of similar in many different aspects. And, you know, all that does is really compound onto the aging factor.
So older adults often take multiple medications for conditions. I know we talked a little bit about this earlier. How do the use of these certain medications affect brain injury recovery and long-term brain health?
This is kind of a, as we say, you know, one brain injury is one brain injury, and you know, one set of medications is one set of medications. But it really does go into that. You know, it's going to be a case by case basis. And you know, when we look at it, you know, the strategies that we listed earlier, as far as, you know, trying to stay active and trying to get out there, those are you know, those are what we're going to have to rely on. You know, for folks to continue to be engaging. You know, playing those memory games and all that type of stuff. And that's really why we, you know, we do talk a lot about prevention and trying to do that. So, you know, it's really something that an individual needs to consult their doctor with, and they need to, you know, express their concerns that, you know, if they have a brain injury, you know, how those medications might impact that further, how they might feel. And, you know, communication and what we talk about note-taking, right? You know, if someone's has a memory issue, you know, we would tell them to, you know, write down how you're feeling as often as possible, or, you know, spend some time and maybe have someone help you write something down if you have cognitive or memory issues, because you want to report that information back to your doctor, because you want that individual to have, you know, the best chance possible for, you know, for getting around, moving and engaging every day.
Absolutely. So for brain injury survivors who may have been dealing with long-term effects, what are some signs that maybe from an outside perspective that hospice or palliative care may be appropriate, and how can families kind of navigate that decision with their healthcare provider and make that decision to move forward with that?
I think that's definitely something for, as you said, you know, that conversation with your, you know, your primary care or, you know, your doctors, to look at where that individual is, and, you know, and how they're doing. You know, we do see a lot of times, you know, with aging populations, you know, increased risk for Parkinson's, dementia. You know, those things can definitely occur. And, you know, you want to make sure that the proper measures are put in place so that those individuals, you know, are given a good quality of life, you know, and you know, can have dignity with those types of things. And, you know, it may be that those changes continue to change and rapidly change, you know, with personality, as we talked about earlier, you know, as a person, of course, with dementia or whatnot, you know, there might be those changes. And, you know, it might be difficult for a family member or caregiver to continue to care for that individual as things begin to become more complex. But we definitely encourage folks to continuously talk with their primary care physicians or other, you know, doctors, and keep them, you know, very well aware of the situation and make sure and use them to help make those decisions.
Our guest today on Aging Matters is Daniel Peterzak, Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of North Carolina. When we come back, let's talk about a special conference that you have coming up in April. You're tuned to Aging Matters on WPTF, and from 92.9 AM 680 and WPTF.com, news, talk, traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF, and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one. Aging Matters, joined by Carson Sellers from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Mike Slayman.
Back here for our final segment on Aging Matters. And Daniel, before you go, tell us about your conference happening in April.
We are so excited for our brain injury conference, and we're calling it Thriving Together. One of the, I don't want to say unique things, but one of the things that we love about our conferences is that we combine providers, caregivers, and survivors all into one conference. We have different tracks, if you will, different sessions that one population might find a little bit more important to what they're trying to focus on versus the others. But we really put everyone together because we believe that everyone should be in the room together, and that is how, you know, services should be provided, right, with communication and feedback. But it is going to be in Wrightsville Beach, at the Lumina in Wrightsville Beach. We have a couple of evening engaging opportunities on April the 13th, and things are going to run through April 15th. But we're really excited. We've got some great dynamic plenary speakers who are going to be there. One of them being what we call a survivor panel, where they're going to be talking about how they have found ways to thrive in life after their brain injury. So really excited about that. I think we have about 20 different speakers, maybe possibly 24, who are going to be doing different sessions. And it's just a really great opportunity for folks in the community to come together and learn more about brain injury. And for those professionals listening, we also have some continuing educational credits available for a few different disciplines. So we would love to see everyone there who wants to learn about brain injury.
That's amazing. That's very important. That's super special that you guys offer that. Hopefully a lot of people come out and take advantage of that amazing resource.
Yeah, so people can go directly to the website. It's BIANCCON, so BiancoCon2025.net. So, and everything they need for registration to learn about it, it's all right there.
Perfect. I love it. Y'all make sure to go check that out. Pivoting a little bit for the last section, we've been talking a lot about people directly that are struggling with a brain injury. Let's dive into a little bit of the caregiving aspect that revolves around this. So can you speak to the unique challenges caregivers face when helping a loved one with a brain injury, and maybe just some resources that can support them?
Yeah, happy to. You know, I tell you what, the amazing strength that I have seen of caregivers in general, and you know, obviously that the brain injury community included, you know, those individuals are extremely hardworking, dedicated, and tough. Like, some of the toughest people I have met are caregivers. You know, so we look at what those individuals go through on a regular basis. You know, I encourage everyone to do this. I try to do it when I see it. When I see folks out in public or whatnot, and you know they're caring for someone, go up and say thank you. They probably don't hear that very often, right?
Yes.
And that's that mental encouragement to let those folks know that the community really appreciates what they're doing, right? And so, you know, let's make sure they know that. You know, caregiving is, you know, there's a lot of universal aspects that caregivers face, right? You have physical fatigue, mental fatigue. You know, you have a lot of challenges where you're trying to balance maybe finances, right? How does someone work and care for someone? And again, these are universal, right? This applies to those with brain injury. These are a lot of the common threads that we see with these individuals. You know, how do you take care of an individual while you're still working 40 hours a week, right? You know, how do you handle the stress and the burnout? How do you handle watching, and particularly with the brain injury community, how do you, you know, you, we know that there's going to be a decline in many of, in their health and in their cognition and in their memory over time. And so, you know, they're going to be sitting watching this loved one who, you know, is ultimately going to have these challenges, or there might be, you know, various hiccups that they then face, right, or other complexities. So, you know, it's a lot of it's, you know, there are some common threads, and as we talked about, you know, the last few minutes, there's a lot of other stuff that, you know, you face with the compound factor of aging plus brain injury that are in there. So
just as a follow-up question, how do you think caregivers can kind of find this unique balance between providing support and encouraging independence for someone recovering from a brain injury?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one is, you know, just like we went through our Thriving Survivor classes, getting individuals engaged into the community so they can do those, participate in different activities is really important. And in certain cases, if someone can, if that person is cognitively and able to, maybe take on a small part-time job or be involved in, some type of community support or activity, again, those are all great ways for that individual to stay engaged. Finding tasks to do around the house, right? If they are going to be at home, can they make the coffee in the morning? Can they do dishes? Can they make a bed? Are they able to do those types of things? Or maybe it's where they're doing something sitting, right? Maybe they're folding towels while they're seated. But giving them a task, just like the rest of us, again, we all want to feel some sense of purpose. We all want to feel like we're able to do stuff. Nobody necessarily just wants to kind of sit there and just have kind of everything handed, right, when they feel like they could do more. So, giving them tasks is really important, and it's cognitively beneficial.
Going a little bit more into this caregiving aspect, a term that we have spoken about a lot on this podcast, Aging Matters, is caregiver burnout and just how that can kind of start and how to deal with that. What advice do you have for a caregiver who is struggling dealing with their own mental health and their own well-being while also caring for someone else?
That's a hard question to answer, right?
Yes,
because we know that, again, these individuals are pushing a boulder up a hill in some cases, and part of the weight of that boulder is their own stuff, right? They might have guilt or self-doubt, right? Am I doing enough? What more could I do? They're not going to probably be as socially active as they should. So all this obviously leads into this and many other factors. So one of the things we say is if you can carve out 15 minutes a day for yourself, do it, right? Some cases, and this is obviously one of the things that respite is extremely important for those who can have it, even if it's 15 minutes, an hour. Did you get a shower in today, right? that's an extremely important thing. Just a few minutes every day, just something for yourself. Be a little bit selfish, if you can even call it that. Meet your basic necessities is extremely important. It's obviously going to be difficult to sleep. We know that, right? If someone's up, if you have someone who has dementia or some kind of memory issues, right? Because you might be waking up 20 times a day. Every time, you might have a doorbell chime go off, or, anytime you hear something, you're thinking someone's moving. If you can get the sleep one way or another, that's an important aspect. Making sure that nutritional needs are met. We all often run and maybe skip a meal or something else like that, but making sure that that's done, and then of course some kind of physical activity if there is an opportunity for that within what that looks like. Now, that's all easy to say, right? But working that into someone who, again, is really trying to push themselves to care for another one, that definitely can be a lot harder. The other aspect, the social aspect, we offer several caregiver groups through our support groups, which you can find online at bianc.net, BIANC.net. And so, there are caregiver groups. So, having that emotional support system in place is also important. It might be through a support group. It might be maybe there's a couple other people that you just kind of talk with, or a family, person that you can talk with, through your own prayers, right? But definitely, reaching out, letting folks when you need help. I think that's probably one of the things that we hear the least. I think everyone has a hard time reaching out for help in many cases, but I feel like caregivers often feel like they need to do it all by themselves, and they don't. They can ask for help, and communities are always willing to step in and help them out.
Yes, and also you can help out other individuals too. I know you always look out for volunteers.
Yes, we are always looking for volunteers. We had a bit of a pullback from COVID and are still looking to kind of rebuild our army of volunteers. But again, there is a form that folks can fill out on BIANC.net. And, we're always looking. I mentioned camp earlier. We need a ton of volunteers to come and help with camp. The more, the merrier. And, even folks, if they're interested in helping us with the unmasking program, they're welcome to sign up and help us with that. And folks who like to do clerical stuff, we always need help filing paperwork and cleaning up the office. So there's something for everybody.
We've been visiting with Daniel Peterzak, Executive Director of the Brain Injury Association of North Carolina. Thanks so much for being with us.
thank you all so much for having us. And any more information is needed, BIANC.net.
If you go to Transitions Life Care, you can get more information about what we talked about today. And if you missed any part of today's show, or if you want to share it with a family member or a friend in need, go to WPTF.com. And under the show tab, you'll find Mary Lucas's smiling face and our Aging Matters logo. All the archive shows of Aging Matters are also there. And you can search for Aging Matters wherever you get your podcast. And that's Aging Matters for this week. For Carson Sellers with Transitions Life Care, I'm Mike Slayman. Tune in next Saturday at 1 on WPTF for Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you. A service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care. Have a great day.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, FM 92.9, AM 680, and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.